All right, great to have you back with us as we get ready for baseball this afternoon, Game 3 between the Giants and the Pittsburgh Pirates. We bring in the Chronicle's Bruce Jenkins. Bruce, good morning. How are you today?
Doing well, Marty. Thanks. What's going on?
Well, a couple of things. One, I wanted to mention Steve Bitker, who retired after 30 years at KCBS Radio and 10 at KNBR. And Steve has been a great sports reporter. He wrote a book about the 58 Giants, and his last day was yesterday. He retired, so I want to mention that to you.
Yeah, I had a chance to get on his last show and wished him well. That book on the 58 Giants is a real treasure. It's hardcover. It's astoundingly well researched. It's amazingly thorough, and all sorts of good information on that. History-minded fans should definitely take a look at that. It is available on Amazon, and he researched it mostly in the 1990s. So he's got a long interview with Bill Rigney in there, the Giants' first manager out here, and some other folks who unfortunately have passed on. But it's great, and it was good to be on with him. He's been the anchor of KCBS Radio for quite a few years, and he's moving on to play some golf and enjoy retirement, but really, really, really good man and a very, very good professional.
Good baseball man. Of course, teamed up with Hal Ramey for so many years on KCBS and doing all their sports. We'll have Steve on with us next weekend. He's going to come on and talk about his baseball career and the book and some of his favorite moments. So I definitely want to acknowledge him and wish him well. So I'm glad that we could do that.
Yeah.
Well, how about last night, Bruce, in the game? I mean, Kevin Gausman in 12, I think the Giants ended up with 17 strikeouts. He had 12 of them, no walks. An amazing pitcher's duel last night.
Yeah, I was really glad to see him come out and hit for himself, in the eighth inning. And then he comes out for the ninth, and, it's kind of the old way of thinking. It was his ball game. That was his ball game to win or lose. And, he's out there looking like the Cy Young candidate every single time. And, he had the splitter going. They weren't really touching him. And I just felt as soon as they got two really cheap hits that had nothing to do with his stuff whatsoever, there were two, they still couldn't solve them. Now you got first and third. And, whenever that happens to anybody, whether it's Scherzer or anybody, any great pitcher, and all of a sudden, oh, geez, is that it? And, he made the move, which, I think at that, they were so deep in the game, it's first and third. Maybe he's losing a little bit of stuff, and it was just a shame, that they tied it. Interestingly, Brian Reynolds, the guy who immediately tied the game off McGee, he's the guy who went to Pittsburgh in the McCutcheon deal with Kyle Crick, and he's a tremendous hitter. He's hit wherever he went, and he's still playing great ball. So that was an interesting aspect of it. But that kid that the Pirates started was really good. He looks like he's about 16. He throws about 12 different pitches, and they couldn't figure him out at all. And then you get to, they finally comes down to the 11th inning. And what I liked about it? Well, first of all, when you get into extra innings and all of a sudden there's a guy on second, you almost want to get two runs, because the Giants scored and all of a sudden, boom, triple, and this is going to evaporate. You almost want to just lead off with a two-run homer, so you have a little bit of cushion. The Giants only had one run cushion, but I liked the way when it came down to what are you going to do with Berger and the bases? Are you going to load the bases? How are you going to do this to try and keep the game going? And Kapler went out, and Posey was there, the whole infield, and they all talked it over, and they figured out what they wanted to do. They wanted to load the bases to get the lefty-lefty thing with Berger and Polanco, which didn't work out. But, a really interesting game. It's the kind of game where you're going to make a lot of moves. They don't always work out. But I didn't have a huge problem with any of the Kapler's moves.
No, in fact, the Berger move with Polanco I liked. And the truth of the matter is the first two strikes, he jammed Polanco, and then he threw a slider away. He had no chance.
Yeah.
Zero chance. And I said, well, he's got him in a hole. Just keep throwing that pitch.
Right.
And he didn't. He threw a pitch on the plate that allowed him to muscle it out to the outfield. But if he would have kept throwing the slider, and I know it's not his best pitch. He likes that upper fastball. But, Bruce, he had him going that second pitch, the second strike he couldn't even touch. So it was an interesting way to do it. I love the way Reynolds hits as well. And we just had Ken Mock on, and Mock was driving home from a charity golf tournament that he went to with Dick Groat today, believe it or not, the old
Pittsburgh Pirates.
Yeah, the Pittsburgh shortstop MVP from 1960. So he was in the car. But he was talking about Reynolds, and we talked about the shift and things like that. And he said, guys like Reynolds, those are the kind of ball players you want because they will use the whole field. And I thought it was just refreshing to see. And I know McGee comes in, and Reynolds just said, you know something? I'm hitting this ball to right field.
Yeah.
And that's what he did. And it was just a shot to right field. And we haven't seen too much of it because it's all homers, walks, and strikeouts. And it was a baseball moment I liked just for that aspect of it.
No, absolutely. Yeah, we've talked about that a lot, how, you know, whenever Slater does it or anybody on the Giants, they've got a pretty good feel for it, I think better than some teams. And of course, Reynolds would fit right in with that mustache, too. I mean, he and Yaz could be could be partners in the new look there.
Yeah, it was a great game. Gausman, you can't say enough about him.
I know.
With the splitter. And, you know, the Giants starting pitching is the best in the National League. It could even be the best in baseball. I haven't looked at all the numbers today. But, you know, I always say the top five starting staffs are the teams that make the playoffs, and the Giants are right there. Now, it's only May 15th. We got a long, long way to go on the cattle drive here. You know, we haven't even had the stampede yet. So we've got a long way to go. But they're playing good ball, but the summer looms ahead, and they're a team built around some older players, and they got to have some other guys in the lineup hit the ball hard, not bloop them in, you know, got to get some other people to help.
Yeah, well, you know, I think, you know, they're not getting a lot from Dickerson, Flores, you know, La Stella, right. Dubon to a degree, and I think those guys are going to hit. I just, having watched them, their track records, you know, the numbers on the back of the baseball card, as they say, I think those guys are going to hit, and they get Solano back. I'm not terribly worried about it. You know, a game like last night, you wonder if there's anybody going to hit besides Gausman for a while. But, I think it's a little bit on the downside right now, but I think those guys I mentioned are going to hit, and you know, they really need Posey and Crawford. You know, Crawford once again with a big home run, shades of the 2014 wild card game there, the grand slam he hit behind Bumgarner. He put it almost in the same spot in the same stadium, but not worried about their hitting. We'll see how it goes.
Well, Crawford has been terrific, and I saw a stat last night. I think Mark Sanchez retweeted it from MLB or somebody. Crawford's got, what, like 8 home runs, and 5 of them put the team ahead, and 2 tied the game. And he's just having a tremendous season, tremendous season.
Yeah, and I don't see him wearing down. I mean, he never really has, and his defense is just phenomenal. He still hasn't made an error, right? I think they flashed that on the screen. I mean, that's for a shortstop to have 0 errors. That's wild. But not terribly surprising with Crawford. But yeah, he's had a knack for the big hit. Really, he's had so many of them over the years. And you know, he's looking to come right back and play shortstop for this team next year. I wouldn't be against it. My God, the guy's a tremendous player.
Well, it is May 15th, and as I said, it's a long way to go. There's some teams are starting to play a little better now in the league. I mean, the Mets are starting to win a little more consistently, even though they don't hit a lot. They're pitching. Bruce, it's a year of pitching. I swear, it's a year of, if you have the overall starting staff and bullpen, you're going to get stuff done. So the Phillies are starting to get a little better pitching. They're starting to win, and Dodgers have won 3 in a row, and how about the Padres? What went on with them with COVID this week? How about that?
Yeah, that's disturbing. You know, the Yankees have dealt with that too. It's such a part of the scene. You know, you want to think that that things are getting better. More and more teams are reaching that vaccination threshold where, you know, they get 85% and they can relax, really relax the restrictions. I mean, last night we actually got a look at one of these, what the Giants really look like. I mean, who would know if some of these guys are growing a mustache on the bench, you know? And but it was great to see Kapler without a mask. And, you know, there's a lot of things that are going to ease just the day-to-day grind and the anxiety and all the restrictions these guys go through. It's a totally different life than what you know in the big leagues, you know, starting with, you know, breakfast and where you can go. And that's being eased. But, you know, as we see, it's still not over, and things are still going to happen. But I think, you know, hopefully as the summer goes on, we'll see a lot less of these things. And if you go out to see a team, you might actually get their whole roster. what a miracle. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know Kapler had a beard.
I know. Yeah, exactly.
Really? I had no idea.
Yeah.
So that was something. Hey, they used the five-man infield last night. That I thought that was interesting too.
Yeah, that's an old standard. I guess if you talk about the shift, would that be no longer legal? I think that'd be fine as long as they're still in the infield, which of course they are if they're all playing in. But yeah, that's always an interesting strategy. I mean, I think if you looked at it over the years, it's backfired in a huge way, but then again, you get that sharp grounder, and one of the five guys throws out the runner at home, and you're starting to get out of the woods. So, yeah, interesting.
How do you like the matchup today? Cueto, as Bill explained it, was just off his game last Sunday, not really ready. And now we get Tyler Anderson again, who's pitched great for the Pirates.
Yeah, good for him. That's you know, he had a little bit of a rough go, and you wondered if maybe he had the command. He certainly has the good attitude and the competitiveness, but that's a great thing for him. But, yeah, Cueto, it seems like every week we talk about him in a different vein. You know, he's hurt. You know, does he have any future with his club? Or, oh, my God, he can pitch forever. Or, oh my God, that's one of the best outings of the season. I think he's due for a good one. But it's always a complete treat to see him go. So I'd like to see him get deep in the game and get the Giants get him a lead like the Giants tend to do more often than not, and see where it goes.
Yeah, Anderson's been pretty stingy, giving up runs and hits. But yeah, I'm sure the platoon will be the right hand of the platoon will be in there today. So see if they can't get something going at the top of the order. Talkman probably needs a day off anyway. He's been playing just about every day, and I think Bill said he's 1-for-10 in this series. Well, you wrote a long column today, and I take it you are not in favor of replay. Is that correct?
Well, I can't say I'm not in favor. Dave Fleming, who in this piece, you see him coming out against it, like to get rid of it entirely. But he did say you want it in the postseason. You might even want it for, you know, plays at the bank, so to speak, plays at the plate where it involves a run, scoring or not scoring. But aside from that, I mean, what really triggered that article was watching the game Tuesday, Logan Webb's game, where the inning apparently ends where Crawford throws out Joey Gallo at first, and we go to commercial. Great, they saved a run, and you come back from commercial, and they're still hashing it out. Next thing you know, it's 1-0. And how did that happen? It happened because it happened in New York. The run scored in friggin' New York, okay? And it took 4 minutes. So forget that. That has to go. I've been railing against this for years. You know, my solution has always been, or it's not a solution, but, you know, they can't ditch the headquarters because it costs millions of dollars. Meanwhile, it's just a blight on the game, going back to New York to have the umpires get on the headphones. And meanwhile, half the time at home, or the broadcasters, we already know how it came out. Okay, there you go, he's safe. We know that like 2 minutes before they tell you, and then they might come back and say that he's out. It's a farce. It's a total farce. And Fleming made the best point of all, is that it wrecks the fun. There's two things. Kruko says it wrecks the rhythm of the game for a pitcher who has to sit out there, and next thing you know, he hasn't thrown a pitch in 4 or 5 minutes. But it ruins it for the fans too. I mean, you have situations where a game will end, except it didn't end, and then maybe it keeps going. Or okay, 5 minutes later, it did end. You know, go crazy. I can't stand it. I would love to see MLB just try it for a month, maybe sometime next season, because it takes them forever to implement anything. But just do away with it. Go back to the old style, play it for a month, and see if the world ends. I suspect it wouldn't.
You know, we almost had it last night with the fly ball by Polanco because Kapler said, well, wait a minute. He passed the runner on first, maybe before the ball was caught, and therefore something should happen. And, of course, he's out once the ball – it's a fly. It's a fly ball, and it's caught, and he's out, and the run scores, and that's the end of it. But we had the standing around for 3 or 4 minutes last night. And I was saying to myself, they've already doused Polanco with water. They've ripped his shirt off and everything. And what
They're
if this game had to continue?
Dryer.
Really, what if this game had to continue? It would have been crazy last night. So I saw it. Ken Maka was just on with us, and he said, as a sports fan, and you pointed this out in the column, that, you know, it's football, basketball. It takes away the great moment. Mock said, you know, you're watching a football game and your guy scores a touchdown and everyone's going crazy and you're happy and everyone says, well, wait a minute. Maybe wasn't over the goal line. So it's been addictive and it's been pervasive through not just baseball but all, basketball too, all the sports.
Yeah, I mentioned the Don Dinkinger call in the 85 series, which people still talk about, and it was so crucial and so relevant to the outcome. But how many other calls in baseball can you remember that just resonate, like, for decades? You know, there aren't that many. That's the only one that came to my mind. I'm sure there's others. You go to different towns and they'll point it out. But it doesn't happen that often where it's a call that just, you know, just normally, okay, it's a bad call. Let it go. Things even themselves out eventually. You'll get over it. And meanwhile, the game will be 2:30 instead of 3:15.
Yeah, yeah. The Joe Mauer ball down the left field line that I'm trying to think, was it Tim McClelland missed it, and in the playoffs of Minnesota.
Yeah.
That's one that comes to mind. But you're right, there aren't many that come to mind and say, well, that really changed the game.
Yeah, really had a big outcome on the World Series being won or something really huge.
I agree. Let's look a couple of this day in baseball history today together. Sal Magley. Bruce, I remember this so well. He was a Giant for so many years, and he would kill the Dodgers. Well, at this point of the season, 1956, the Dodgers needed a starting pitcher. Magley had been waived out of the National League. The Dodgers brought him back. He ended up 13-5. Newcomb won 27, and Magley got some Cy Young votes, and he became a Brooklyn Dodger. And if you lived in New York in those days, you could not believe it, that Magley was a Dodger.
Oh, no. He tended to dominate the Dodgers when he was with the Giants. They call him the Barber because the chin music that he tossed up there. He was very, very nasty. They say he was actually quite a mild-mannered, nice fellow, but he'd get on the mound, and he was an unbelievable competitor. They had a bunch of fights between the teams over bean balls that were going on. And it's funny because in the 51, the Giants win the pennant. He got that start in Game 3 against Don Newcomb, and he left for a pinch hitter after 8. So it was Larry Jansen who got the win for the Giants after Bobby Thompson hit the home run, and Jansen threw like 4 pitches. I mean, Magley did a lot of the work.
Magley,
go ahead.
No, very, very famous pitcher in the early 50s. And Bruce, he jumped to the Mexican League in the mid-40s to get more money, and he was banned from baseball, and then they let him back in, and the Giants took him back, but he was gone for 3 or 4 years. Then he became the pitching coach for your favorite team, the Seattle Pilots, with Joe Schultz.
Yeah, he was. There a couple of very wealthy Mexican brothers offered the U.S. players huge amounts of money to go play in the Mexican League, and he went for it. He spent the 46 and 47 seasons in the Mexican League. And commissioner at the time, Happy Chandler, banned all these guys for 5 years. And Magley went back to Niagara Falls, where he's from, and bought a gas station and pitched in Canada. And finally, in 49, the ban was lifted, and he joins the Giants. He was an extremely relevant guy. You know, he started the Willie Mays Vic Wertz game. Magley started that game for the Giants, and he was removed Actually, so a lefty could come in and face Vic Wirtz. Mm-hmm. Don Little? Is that Don Little.
Yeah, correct.
Don Little. Yeah. So you just wonder if Magley was still out there for Wirtz. Does he hit the ball down to first base, or does he strike out? Or he's just shy of pitching to Vic Wirtz in that game. So he's a big part of a lot of history.
Yeah, and Don Little came in, and Wirtz hit the ball that Willie Mays caught, the greatest catch ever in World Series history, and Little was then taken out of the game. And as he left the mound, he said to everyone, well, I got my guy.
You know, he was actually with the Cardinals in 1958, but I looked it up. He never faced the Giants. He didn't pitch at Candlestick as a member of the Cardinals in the Giants' first season. So, but interesting guy for sure.
Yeah, good story, Sal Magley. So he became a Brooklyn Dodger today. Let's bring Bill in. Bill, good morning. You know, you've been listening patiently here to Bruce talk about baseball with me. What's on your mind?
Well, today Hunter Strickland got traded. He was with Tampa this year. He went in as a minor league contract, and he pitched pretty well, 16 innings, 16 Ks, a 1.69 earned run average, and the Angels picked him up for a couple minor leaguers. He pitched with the Mariners and Nationals and the Mets after the Giants, but for 5 years I thought he pitched pretty well for the Giants. I'd like to get both of your impressions on Hunter Strickland then and now, and what do you expect from him when he's in that Angel bullpen? Because the bullpen and Angels are struggling. They got an earned run average over five as a compact order. So I'd like to hear both of you talk about Hunter Strickland a little bit.
Go ahead, Bruce.
Well, he was with the Giants. He was a really interesting guy. It was a terrific interview, very, very well spoken and calm and composed, and seemed to have a really good idea about things. But you know, when in the heat of competition, he could go a little bit overboard. And of course, the famous Bryce Harper incident, and that stayed with him for a while. And but you know, the guy had a tremendous fastball. His, you know, as we speak, his career ERA is in the very low threes. Big strikeout guy, and you know, a good right-handed weapon. He's definitely a little too well traveled for his own liking, like you say. You know, Seattle, and then Washington, the Mets, mm-hmm. Tampa Bay, and now the Angels. The Angels have needed pitching since I think you know Joe Coppi was at shortstop, or so it would seem. But
Coppe.
Yeah, and Bobby Knopp, QRLPZ. But you know, yeah, the Angels need him, and that's a good place to be. That team really needs a lift. I mean, my goodness, all that talent. They're in last place, of course, as they can't get pitching together. And I'm not sure how much he's going to be able to do. But who knows, if he pitches well enough, maybe he can close a little bit for him. He's got about 20 saves to his career so far, so who knows?
Well, he joins Tony Watson, who's in their bullpen, who's doing pretty well, so that's interesting.
Yeah.
Strickland, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, his stuff was outstanding because no one could throw that hard. You know,
right.
Through 97, you say, my God.
Yeah, that was unusual.
Yeah, now, all of a sudden, he throws 95, and he's just another guy on the street corner. So
exactly.
He's got to really have his command to be effective. But the Angel bullpen is back to being what it was in the 60s, and they used to call him the arson squad. Remember that, Bruce?
Yeah, they come in and immediately light a big fire. You can't
put
it out.
The arson, they called him the arson squad. That's what they used to call him in those days. So he becomes part of that. So we'll see. The best thing about Hunter Strickland was when the Giants did give him the chance to close, and he was doing all right until he got in the incident, I think, with the Marlins, with Brinson, and he broke his hand on the wall.
Yeah, yeah.
And
so he had another incident there, yeah.
Yeah, but he said to me, and we made a deal in spring training, that if he got 35 saves, he was going to take me moose hunting.
I would say if you get it, you don't take me moose hunting.
Right. So, we were going to go moose hunting somewhere in Canada or something like
that.
Because we kept talking about his duck hunting company, and you know, he put out a clothing line for duck hunters and all this stuff. So I said, what was the one thing you've never hunted? He said, a moose. So I said, all right. And some listener, somebody was listening. and said, I have a lodge up in Canada, and you guys are welcome to come up here. So I showed him the email, and we said, all right, you get 35 saves, I'll take you moose hunting. So that's the way that ended at about six saves, I think.
Yeah, they weren't talking about Bill Scourin either, whose name is Moose.
No.
So, we're going to go hunting for a big Yankee first baseman.
So I hope he does well, but I'm not sure the stuff plays today.
Yeah, I know. I'm a little skeptical, but he's quite a decent fellow when he's just day to day.
Yeah. Anything else, Bill?
Well, the only other thing I wanted to ask is Albert Pujols. He's got about four or five teams inquiring about him and to see if he'd come back. Seattle being one, even St. Louis. I just don't think he's got enough in the tank yet. I think what you saw in the Angels this past year, I just don't think he's got the spark in the bat anymore. But, again, another team might just try to pick him up. The Cardinals might, just to keep him in the Cardinal family. Your thoughts on him, too?
Yeah, well, it was kind of an unceremonious departure from the Angels, who just really decided that they didn't want to see him up at the plate anymore, as classy as he is, and Lord knows his reputation and Hall of Fame and everything else, but they wanted to clear the way for Walsh and Ohtani and DH, he was hitting about 198. You know, knowing Pujols, I wouldn't put anything past him. I wouldn't put a little resurgence past him. What does he have, 670 homers or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he could conceivably get to 700 over a couple of years, but you know, the natural landing spots just didn't seem to work out. I mean, you know, Tony La Russa is managing the White Sox, and, you know, he and Tony were very close in St. Louis, but Tony might have the best club in baseball right now. I saw an ESPN article making that claim. They've got hitters all over the joint, and they just don't have a spot for him, certainly not every day. And the Cardinals, I think if there were a DH in the National League, he could step right in, but you know, you're not moving Goldschmidt off first base, and I'm not sure Pujols is that fond of St. Louis to just go there and just kind of be there, you know, and pinch hit a couple of times and wave at the fans. So I haven't seen a natural landing spot. I want him to come back mostly because his career average is, they slipped under 300. It's 298. I mean, that's just not right. He's got to get that over 300. I mean, come on. If anybody should have a lifetime average over 300, it should be him.
Yeah, too bad. Well, I think he's toast unless he agrees to be a bench.
He's done.
Yeah, he's toast unless he agrees to be a bench player. And
yeah.
If he would, and, you know, look, Don Baylor did it for years, and every time, he would join a team, that team got into the World Series or the playoffs.
Right.
There are guys who could come off the bench and do damage, the great Johnny Mize, late in their careers. But he doesn't want to do it. He wants to play every day, and if that's the case, I think he's done.
You know, one thing, one point I want to throw out there, you know, as a great player as he had in the career that he had, to be DFA, to end his career, it's just a bad taste in his mouth. And, you know, baseball players might think of that, of Albert Pujols, but they don't think of all the things he did in St. Louis as well as with the Angels. I think he's going to come back somewhere. La Russa said he can't use him. There's no doubt about it. I just think he's going to surface somewhere else. I really do.
Well, there'll be lunch at Original Joe's for you, Bill, if he does.
Yeah, toast. I'll have some toast, Marty.
Very bitter taste for him, the way that he left the Angels. You know, he was very angry the way they went down. Now, Pedro Martinez, he called it a disgrace, the way he was treated there. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure nobody feels more strongly about that than Albert himself. So, yeah, it would be nice to join a team, get some big hits, and go out the way that he should.
We'll see. Bruce, great talking with you. I know we went a little long today, but it's a great weekend for baseball, and we'll talk to you early tomorrow, 7:30 tomorrow.
I'm setting the alarm now. I'm going to get the coffee ready.
Thanks, Bruce.
See you guys.
All right. Boy, that's interesting. The Arson Squad, remember them, Bill?
I do. When you said that, I just started giggling because I said, I remember that. And, of course, Bruce came right back at it. Of course, start the fire with them. When he